Welcome to The Sports Bubble, a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. My name is Jensen Karp, and I'm a sports fan. And look at us, we got a brand new name, The Sports Bubble. You see, with golf and soccer and tennis and NASCAR and maybe baseball, but for a little not baseball, and now maybe baseball again, and basketball, but also maybe not basketball, but yeah, probably basketball, all these sports are returning. And because of that, the No Sports Report just doesn't cut it anymore. But we'd be fooling ourselves to think everything is going back to normal. Normal is clearly subjective in 2020. Things are changing every 15 minutes, and anyone who pretends they know what's going to happen when it comes to athletics, well, they haven't seen that video where Roger Goodell encourages kneeling. Hell has frozen over, and we're living in the Matrix, and the quicker you accept it, the better. So I'll just keep trekking along, following the changes, riding the wave, as our favorite games return, or everything just shuts down again, and we're begging for another Jordan documentary. I'll keep interviewing athletes and sports industry professionals about what they're doing in this very weird time, because someone has to keep track. And now, for the first time, this is The Sports Bubble with Jensen Karp. 5'11", 285-pound WWE superstar Big E is a big ol' sensitive teddy bear. Don't tell his opponents, but the current WWE SmackDown Tag Team Champion, former college football player, and powerlift standout feels a lot. He's a former Intercontinental and NXT champ, a two-time Raw Tag Team Champion, and he's held the SmackDown titles he now possesses a record 6 times. But it's his ability to see the larger picture that's always stood out for me. He's recently been vocal online and in the ring about the racial divide dominating our culture. And though that seems like something second nature to an African-American in the squared circle, well, it hasn't been in the past. There's a pretty big online swell for Big E to finally get an individual shine as a singles champion, and I get why. He's really a new voice in pro wrestling, especially as part of the popular New Day podcast, Feel the Power, and his words are more in line with society than maybe anything else in sports entertainment. This episode, Big E and I talk about the history of the black performer in the WWE, his own experiences with racial bias, and what the wrestling industry is facing in the form of sexual predators and assaulters, outed online by women with the hashtag #SpeakingOut. And to make things a little lighter, we play the cameo game. It's an important episode with Big E in the sports bubble.
Call from
Big E.
To accept, press 1. Press.
Hello, Big E.
What's happening?
Well, I wanted to start off, we're obviously starting to gingerly tiptoe our way back into the real world, but I wanted to know where you've been quarantined and with who.
I am solo dolo. I live in Lando Lakes, which is a real town. It's a real actual town. It's just outside of Tampa, and I've been quarantined alone.
Huh. There's not a ton of people we've spoken to alone. Have you enjoyed it?
I have. So I really like my alone time, even though I'm obnoxious on TV. I am at heart an introvert. I like being alone. I like my alone time. But I did find with the quarantine that, so the first few days, I think, was a little anxiety ridden just because I didn't know. We're just so used to having 4 shows a week, and then we have appearances. And, you know, there are some months where I've been home 3 days the whole month. And that's like pretty common just to be gone all the time. Mm-hmm. So there was some anxiety initially when everything closed down, but then I kind of got into a nice groove for the first probably like 6 to 8 weeks, honestly. And, you know, Florida had been open enough, and maybe it shouldn't have been, but the recent spike in cases, but it allowed for me to go over to Baron Corbin's house. It was about 15 minutes from me, and I would just work out at his garage. So still allowed me to work out. I was finding a nice balance between, we still had the podcast that we were doing, so we were staying busy with that. And I was working out, having more time to, like, I've recently, the last year or so, I've really got into guided meditation. So I've had more time to do that and to stretch. So there were some things that I really enjoyed with having extra time. But then I realized, man, I really miss people. Like, I'm fortunate enough to like so many of my coworkers. And you see them, you know, 5 days a week often. And then you go to maybe seeing them once a week, or if we do tapings, we might do 2 tapings in a row and then be off for 12 days. So it was just weird to not see people that I like. And even things like physical touch, I realized how much I appreciate just a good hug, as simple and as needy as that might sound, just being able to hug someone was something that I missed. So, yeah, man, it's been a lot of kind of just refiguring out the best way to stay sane, I think.
Yeah, well, people who might not have been following the WWE during quarantine and pandemic, you guys have been taping out of Florida, out of kind of a small in-house arena with at first no fans, and then now they've sort of brought in some employees to be fans. This must have been kind of the best case scenario for you since you live out there.
Yeah, it worked for me well because I live about 100 miles from the Performance Center. And so I just hopped in a car and drove the hour and 40 minutes and I could drive back every night. Mm-hmm. So it's also like rare to sleep in your own bed every night. That was new for me. And yeah, so I guess it was convenient in the fact that I haven't been on a plane since like March 12th, 11th-ish, around there. Mm-hmm. And that's very uncommon. We're used to taking, I probably average 3 to 4 flights a week with WWE prior to this.
Yeah, what a different life with this. You know, with the WWE kind of publicly admitting to hitting a bit of a snag with the developmental talent testing positive, how did that throw a wrench into wrestling life? Did that change how you guys normally do things? I mean, is it kind of evolving the same way the rest of the world is?
Well, it definitely changed our shooting schedule that week. So when we heard about the positive test with an NXT talent, we were supposed to tape on that day, but then I think the day it came out. But the next day, so we actually did tape that day. Then the next day, we found out in that evening, the next day we had to stop the taping and we all got tested. We did the nasal swab for coronavirus, which I kind of heard some horror stories. And it's not great, don't get me wrong. Not quite as bad as I thought, but not great either. And so we had all got tested that day. And then if you were negative, then you were allowed to tape again the next day. So it's definitely, you know, caused a shift in the way we do things and tape again. I think there may be some more testing moving forward, which is honestly like what we should be doing, I think.
Yeah, seems safest. And today I saw Kevin Owens came out and spoke a little bit about his decision not to wrestle. And weirdly, the WWE has faced this before the rest of the sporting world. We have Avery Bradley and a bunch of players who've just decided for the health and safety of their family not to join the NBA, or, you know, we'll see that in the NFL soon. You guys have faced it with Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn. There's a bunch of superstars who kind of made their own decisions. Is that what you guys are kind of encouraged to do?
I think so. I think it's, you know, you have to consider what your individual case is, the people you're around. I think for those guys with families, I definitely understand completely because, you know, it can devastate your family. And that would like, you know, to do this, to decide to wrestle, to step into a ring, and the fact that it could really negatively affect your family's future is something that I don't think it's worth the risk. For me, like I said, I go home to no one. So I think there's a certain risk with wrestling that I've accepted anyways for myself. And there's really no fear that I'm going to get anyone else sick, not a family member or anything like that. So I have really minimal contact with anyone else outside of wrestling at all. So it's kind of something that I've been more comfortable going back with, especially now with more testing. But I completely, you know, accept that, you know, there are people who are going to say this is not right for me and my family. And I think it's smart that they decide not to step in a ring.
And you played college football, you found great success in powerlifting, and with all that teamwork that you've been in and the locker rooms that you've been in, both sports and sports entertainment now, can this be contained? Or is social distancing the way? Is, you know, like I have been open about it on the podcast, being very nervous for athletes going back. You've been back. So are there things going on backstage getting ready? Are people keeping it in mind?
Man, it's hard because you talk about, like, I play college football at a major university, at Iowa, and it's very difficult because you're just used to being around your teammates. And I've talked to, like, two of my really good friends who played college ball together. They were like brothers. They're coaches. They're high school coaches. And talking to them about some of the things that they have to do where they have, like, groups of 10, and it's really limited. It doesn't feel like that's not the way we're accustomed to running practices and doing things. Same with us. Like we're a business where there's a lot of contact with another human. It's not like tennis or baseball where you can play these sports and still have distance. You know, we're just used to touching each other. And even in the back, like we're encouraged to wear masks and to be socially distant, but it can be difficult. And it's hard to say, you know, after months and months of seeing people that you really like or your close friends and having no physical contact with them with seemingly no end in sight. You know, this could be probably several more months to go, I would say, at least before we get back to a more normal schedule. So it's definitely something that's encouraged, but I think just naturally it's very difficult for us to continue to maintain distance and to continue to wear masks. And it's something that we need to be cognizant of, but I don't know how you will be able to enforce this in high schools and in the NFL, the NBA, to make sure that guys keep a respectable distance in a sport or in a culture where you're just used to being around people and used to being in close physical contact.
Yeah, I mean, I even have trouble. My mom stopped by the other day to see our kid, and even just like the instinct to want to hug your family isn't something we should be doing, right? I mean, we don't do it. We haven't done it in months, but even 3 months later, I'm seeing myself starting to go for it. I mean, do you guys have kind of those oops moments as well? Like, you know, it just, you've trained in wrestling for so long. How do you just change it out of nowhere?
It's hard. Yeah, it's definitely an adjustment. And I feel like and this isn't the right thing, but I feel like a lot of us were more cognizant of it the first month or 2 months in, but then you get to a point where you're at 8 weeks in, 12 weeks in, and you're just kind of starved for physical contact and being close to people you enjoy. And it's difficult. And it's obviously something that's important because it's really wreaking havoc, man. I like my barber of mine, he's my barber and he's a good friend of mine. Was someone who, not that he didn't believe it, you know, but Jay was someone who was in great shape. He worked out a lot. He's not that old, but he kind of questioned like, hey, I don't know anyone around me who has it. Do you? And just kind of was more, just kind of weary. But then he was in the hospital, just got out of the hospital. He's in the hospital for 8 or 9 days. And, it really took a huge toll on him. He just didn't look the same when he FaceTimed me from the hospital. And you could see how much it took a toll on him. And it's scary to see. Like, I was really worried. Like, is he going to make it? I don't know to see that. But it's something that obviously we need to take very seriously. And, you know, I just think we got to listen to the experts, you know. Yeah. There's a lot of people with, you know, opinions who have no science, who read stuff on Facebook and think they're qualified to weigh in on what we should and shouldn't be doing. Yeah. But I really don't think it's that difficult to put a mask on. You know, I don't think it's worth storming your city halls just to wear a mask, you know. So I have no problem wearing a mask.
More with WWE superstar Big E after this. Now, let's get back to Big E. Well, this time in America has been wild, first with the pandemic and then with the civil unrest stemming from the murder of George Floyd. I wanted to first talk to you about speaking up in your industry. You had a special episode of your podcast where you tackled race. You've tweeted support for Black Lives Matter. You took a knee at a recent WWE taping. You've had gear made with the names of victims that have not yet had the justice they deserve on them. Have you felt supported about this from, I mean, the locker room in general, but maybe white superstars?
Yeah, I have. You know, one of the things that was really eye-opening to me is I had so many of my peers reach out to me, people who worked with us in digital, fellow wrestlers who wanted to reach out and either offer their, you know, support, or some, like, several people also wanted to learn. And like, one of the things that I realized, like, I'm kind of out of the loop with a lot of this stuff, and I have been. I was an African-American lit minor in college, and I found the weight of knowing the history of like what happens to Black men and women in this country. It really feels like a weight. It was depressing. It was sad. And there was a big part of me that just kind of wanted to distance myself from a lot of that stuff after college, because it was hard to just continue to take in these images of Black people unjustly dying and nothing being done about it. But the stuff with George Floyd and the aftermath really weighed so heavy on me. Like you said, we were gonna, you know, the podcast for us is usually very fun and loose and irreverent, but it felt very necessary for us to record an hour and change. And we did it. It was the three of us and a buddy of mine, Andreas Hale, who works in combat sports, covers combat sports, but he also has a history in activism. And, you know, for the three of us, with me, Kofi, and Woods, we don't have the answers, but we wanted to speak to our experiences. So many of my friends, young Black men who have bad histories of being pulled over by police, of being harassed by police, of being unjustly stopped. Like, this is something that we've talked about. And especially now, so many of my friends have kids now, and they're having to, you know, we talk about the talk usually is the birds and the bees and talking to your kids about sex. But for so many Black men and women, their talk to their kids is about how to act when you're pulled over by police. because you don't know what can happen. If you don't follow the letter of everything they say, you fear that your child can be unjustly killed. And even if they do follow every single thing they're told, you never know. So a lot, that's a big part of what it means to raise a Black child. And that's scary, and that's frightening, and that's sad. And, you know, even me, like, I got pulled over. I'd never gotten into any trouble, never had any issues with the law. But in college, it was a group of us. We had this youth leadership program. We all played college football at Iowa. And someone said that we had a gun in the car and called the cops. Mm-hmm. And we did not have a gun in the car. But we got pulled over. I had a gun pulled on me by a cop. And who knows, like, how that could have gone. To have a gun a few inches from your face and to have done nothing wrong. And this happens time and time again. So, you know, for us, it's very frustrating. It's very sad. And I found the George Floyd news really, really weighed heavy on me. It's something that was at the forefront of my mind for days and days thinking about it. And for me, I kind of felt some hopelessness, but I didn't want to just use my anger and frustration and do nothing with it. I wanted to at least have a conversation, and it's been nice, man. We've had so much feedback from different people who reached out and said, man, I didn't consider these things until I listened to your podcast and I learned something, or I heard a perspective I had never heard before. And thank you. And, you know, I'm not going to presume to say we have all the answers or any answers, but we just wanted to speak to our experiences, to not be preachy, to not tell people how to feel or what to believe, but to tell you how we feel, to tell you our experiences, to tell you the experiences of our Black friends and what they go through and the things that are in their minds when it comes to being pulled over by police. So a lot of what we've done recently is trying to raise awareness. And, you know, sometimes I really think I don't know the power or the purpose sometimes of a tweet or an Instagram post. And I really, like, sometimes I wonder, am I just screaming into a void or patting myself on the back when I post something and feeling like I've done something? And that's not, I wanted to make sure that it came from a good place, a place of actually wanting to help make our country and our society more equitable. Sure. I wanted to make sure it came from a place of not self-aggrandizement, but a place of wanting to actually see a better world. So we've done a few things, and I think we're going to continue to do some things, like you mentioned, taking a knee to bring attention to this movement on SmackDown. And the nice thing is, you know, we ran it by Vince McMahon, our boss, and he approved it. We got no pushback there. We got a lot of support from the company with the podcast, and we can't typically put out video, not the whole video because of the way the contract is with our podcast, mm-hmm. but they were so supportive with us putting up the whole conversation because we felt like it was important for people to listen to this hour plus and to see it and to see our faces and see our expressions. So we were thankful that we got support from the company too, but we've done different things. Like you said, we put the names of the victims of these people who lost their lives and shouldn't have, put them on armbands. Shukri Abdi, Breonna Taylor, Tamla Horsford, Riot Milton, and so many more. And we've done a lot with trying to learn ourselves with reading. I actually ran across a great book list from Victoria Alexander, mm-hmm. and she's at Victoria ALXNDR on Twitter and on Instagram. And I had a lot of people reach out to me and ask, like, hey, how can I learn? What can I read? What can I watch? And I'm trying to find stuff that I know of, but she put out this great book list of just stuff. If you want to be an ally and you're trying to learn, here's just a laundry list of books. And she does a great job. I believe she's a PhD student, and she's been putting out consistent information with ways to learn. So we've just tried to do things on our end. I've also worked with some great companies. Astroflave is a supplement company, and they're donating 25% of all the income that comes in from their products in June is going to the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. Same thing with Cameo for a few days. All their cameos, they were donating a portion to the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. And we've got a few other things in the mix, too, that we're trying to not just post on Twitter and on social media, but to help raise money, too, for organizations that are working towards racial justice. So it's been a lot of that, just trying to do the work in our communities to try to stay on top of this, to keep even just keeping the conversations going, man. Honestly, just to keep talking about this. Yeah. And I think too often we've just shied away from this because we didn't want to be labeled a racist. And it can be uncomfortable because as soon as you feel that someone is saying you're a racist or you're racially insensitive, your first instinct can be to the backpedal or to defend yourself.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't want it to be about, it's not about labeling people around me racist or pointing fingers. It's about having these honest conversations and analyzing the biases that we carry and being honest about that. And for us, it's really just about like the same protection I want for my female friends and for my gay friends and people I don't know who are gay or female, the same protections that I would want for them, I want for Black men and Black women. And I, you know, that's all this fight is for. And I think it's something that's worth continuing to fight for, even beyond this next week or this next month.
Yeah.
It's something that's going to be at the forefront of, you know, at least my mind, and trying to continue to keep the conversations going and to keep fighting for a more equitable country, a country where you don't feel that being Black is a strike or two against you.
Yeah. Anyone who hasn't listened to the podcast, I highly suggest you do. You guys did a great job. And you talk about seeing some change even in what a tweet means and those kind of things. I mean, I was so happy to see Randy Orton tweet his support for Black Lives Matter. And not for any reason other than in the past, he's sort of been a bit conservative with his political views online. But I really do think that things like that mean a lot. When you see someone who, you know, you don't necessarily equate with that kind of justice or online, you know, social justice or whatever you want to call it, and then they jump out with it, it has to be rewarding.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Randy will admit, like, he doesn't have the squeaky clean past. Like, he's definitely, you know, he's definitely made some mistakes in the past. And that's not to absolve him of anything he's done. But like you said, he's had this really conservative viewpoint. It's not for me to try to make him a liberal or anything. But
yeah.
I think it's something that he has some, you know, close Black friends. And I consider Randy a friend. And we've had some of these conversations at work, you know, just over the course of the last few years, even. And I think he's finally starting to get it, you know. And like you said, that is as impactful as it can be to see a Black athlete or Black entertainer speak up about these things. I think it can be really impactful as well to see someone like Randy, who's had these conservative views, who in the past would never speak up to say anything like this, to, you know, I thought he did a really good job with what he posted.
Yeah.
And to offer that kind of support.
Growing up, I was a huge WWF fan at the time, obviously becomes WWE. I was never, and I'm a white kid from the suburbs, I was never a huge fan of the way Black wrestlers were portrayed. There weren't a lot of realistic portrayals back then. You know, a lot of stereotypes sort of being thrown out there. What did you see as a kid watching? What was your representation feeling when you watched?
Yeah, man, I guess it really hit me more as I got older, as I moved into my teenage years. And I agree completely. I think we have to say it kindly, a very rocky past with the way we've depicted Black wrestlers, for sure. And, you know, you have so many that are celebrated, and I'm not going to point the finger at the performer, but, you know, Junkyard Dog and Kamala was an even African savage who didn't speak, and he patted his stomach. And, you know, there were a lot of depictions of Black wrestlers that really make you cringe when you look at it now. And we wanted to not be that with the three of us. That's what we really pushed for. And, you know, at first it was kind of in that mold. We came out as three Black inspirational speakers / preachers, and it didn't feel right. It didn't feel like us. And then when we were finally able to have more of the reins, we had a more authentic depiction of who we were. You know, it's obviously, you know, your character is who you are with the volume turned up is kind of the saying in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we wanted, because representation does matter. And I know sometimes it can be just something that people throw out there, but it does matter when you see an authentic portrayal of someone who looks like you, who acts like your friends or talks like your friends, because the three of us are into video games and anime, and we have a myriad of interests. And so many of our friends, so many of my Black friends who I grew up with, were the same.
Yeah.
Like, they felt ostracized because there weren't that many depictions of Black guys who liked anime or Black women who were nerds. So we wanted to kind of open up that box a little bit and to show, like, hey, there's a lot of us who talk like this, and who, like, this is what we enjoy and this is who we are. And we want to keep pushing that to get more realistic depictions of black wrestlers and to kind of get beyond that past that didn't depict black wrestlers in a very good way.
Yeah, and I think obviously you guys now being veterans in the locker room, I think you guys are clearly have been, especially you and Kofi, and I mean, you guys have been changing the culture around you. Superstars like Bianca Belair, Keith Lee, Ricochet, Malcolm Bivens. It feels like the tide is turning on a gimmick that would glaringly only be given to a black superstar.
Right, right. And that was kind of one of the things that we wanted to do was like, you get white wrestlers who are, like Wood says it in a way that they get this blank slate, that they can be any character across the spectrum. They can be just pretty much any character you can imagine they can pretty much be. But with black wrestlers, until maybe recently, and it's something we're still fighting for, you know, you had these very few tropes to pick from. You can be an angry, randomly angry guy, or you can be like a rapper slash dancer, or like we got saddled with these preacher gimmicks. You just had these like, okay, he's a black wrestler or she's a black wrestler, and this is, you have three or four of these archetypes to choose from. We want to break that mold and continue breaking that mold and showing that the black experience is not this homogenous single experience. We come from so many different backgrounds and countries, and we have a myriad of interests, and we want to continue to explore those on screen. And we want our fans to be able to see black wrestlers, Japanese wrestlers that aren't just stuck into these boxes, that are allowed to be full, unique, interesting characters. And I think that matters.
Yeah.
And I think we'll continue to keep pushing for that.
And no more Kid Rock. That's all I'm asking also. No more Kid Rock. That will help us at least see some black culture in WWE.
Yeah.
After this, more with WWE superstar Big E. Right now, Feeding America is working tirelessly to ensure our most vulnerable populations, like students who are out of school, the elderly, individuals whose jobs are impacted, and low-income families, continue to have access to food and other needed resources during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Feeding America Food Bank Network is committed to serving communities and people facing hunger in America, and their greatest need is donations and support of local food banks. This podcast is committed to donating a portion of the proceeds from the show to Feeding America, and we hope that you can join us in this effort too. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org/COVID-19. And now the rest of my chat with WWE superstar and the host of the New Day podcast, Big E. This past week has been extremely illuminating. You kind of hinted to it for a second earlier, specifically in independent wrestling and in the UK with the hashtag speaking out about sexual harassment, assaulters, predators inside of the wrestling world, which I did not see it being such an epidemic. I know you tweeted out your support of the women coming forward. Were you as surprised to see how just absolutely rotten to the core this business has kind of been the last 15 years, mostly outside of the WWE?
Yeah, man. It's, sadly enough, I wasn't surprised. You hear some whispers or have an understanding of the culture. I will say there wasn't any specific instance or wrestler that I knew that I saw and that I had like covered up, or there wasn't anything that I knew of and just shrugged my shoulders at. So there wasn't anything that I was specifically aware of, but it really, really saddened me to see and disgusted me to see how prevalent this was. And I have to give my like hats off to like a friend of mine, actually was the one who started this all, Victoria. She was brave enough to tell her story about David Starr, and this all came out. And then she emboldened a lot of women and even men to come out and talk about some of the things that they've experienced, the way they were victimized in this industry. Mm-hmm. And I think too often we as men, we shrugged our shoulders, or we've said, she's probably lying, or we've turned a blind eye to it. And we haven't given these victims the voice and the respect that they deserve. And I think our industry can no longer tolerate what's going on. We can no longer tolerate rape. We can no longer tolerate sexual harassment. We can no longer shrug our shoulders at the way women have been victimized in this industry. And I hope these stories, I don't want to know that there are more stories, or that, you know, I don't want that to be the case. I hope this is the end of it, but I hope every woman gets an opportunity to speak her voice, to be heard, to be respected, to not be dismissed. I hope all of the people who are guilty of this, I hope they're eradicated from the business. I hope they're arrested. I hope they're imprisoned. I hope it's a real turning point in our business. And I hope that women aren't persecuted. I've already seen a lot of horrible comments from people. You know, at times, I think we have a great fan base, but I think it can also, at times, there's a portion of it that can be very toxic. I think the way it disrespects women, the way it condones abusers and rapists, I think is disgusting. And the problem, I think one of the things that happens with a lot of these movements is that it causes a surge, and then a week or so later, it can be forgotten. And I hope to God that's not the case. I hope this is not forgotten. I hope it's something that we continue to talk about, that we continue to clean up this industry, that we continue to eradicate abusers, rapists, that we get them all out of this business, yeah. That we have them prosecuted, because it's something that no woman or man, no one should ever be victimized or have to endure. And seeing so many stories of kids, of people who are underage, who came into the wrestling business and wanted to learn or to train and were victimized is really disgusting. It's abhorrent. And I hope we continue to keep fighting this and to listen to and support those who come out, who tell their horrible stories, who are brave enough to, that they get the support they need, that we don't condone these abusers, yeah. That we don't just say, hey, it's okay to go to rehab and you can come back, because that's not something that I'm interested in if it means that justice is not something that we're trying to pursue here. So I hope it's something we continue to talk about and continue to be open with. And I'm glad these stories are being heard. I'm sorry that there are so many stories, but it's something that's important to speak out against and to show women that we support them and that we're going to do our best to investigate these allegations, to get rid of these abusers, and that we have them prosecuted.
Yeah, I mean, it's well said. And I think, too, like, it's not the 80s business anymore. You know, I, as a guy who's watched wrestling, and I worked at WWE for a while in writing, and I mean, it's a different crew. You know, you guys all grew up with a different thought process than kind of what the womanizing, and that's why it was so shocking to me to hear that there was kind of this underbelly in indie wrestling. And I think, you know, with you and so many guys on that roster involved in activism, I think we've already seen changes, whether it be, you know, a real kind of reach out to the Pride community with Finn Balor. I remember with his, you know, his gear with all the rainbow, and now, you know, Jake Atlas and things that are happening in WWE. I think it's just now it's time to focus on the women, it appears.
Right. No, completely. And I think, you know, with as horrible as this year has been in many respects, yeah. I think the one silver lining is that people are actually listening. You know, I feel like a lot of times in the past, and maybe it's due to the pandemic and the fact that a lot of us have had to slow down. We don't have as many distractions. A lot of us we're either not working or not working as much. And we now have time to listen, and people are listening. So I hope we continue to listen. I hope we take these things seriously, whether it's racial inequality, whether it's, you know, the awful crime of rape and domestic abuse. You know, I hope we continue to have these conversations and continue to take people seriously and actually listen and not to speak from a place of defense or condoning these acts, but to actually listen, to actually want to make our cultures better.
Yeah. Well, on a lighter note, someone wrapping up the last ride on WWE Network right now, can this really be The Undertaker's retirement? I've heard this before. There's no way. What are your thoughts? Is he done wrestling?
Oh, man, I don't know. I thought he was done when he took off the gloves and laid them down. So I don't know. And athlete retirements, whether it's in wrestling or not, it can be very shaky. You know, it's... We all were wrapped up in The Last Dance, and obviously MJ retired and then unretired. And it's very common. And, you know, with a guy as popular as The Undertaker, I think, you know, what I thought was the cinematic match, the match with AJ, I thought was incredible.
Yeah.
And I think he can continue to have those kinds of matches. I think the cinematic match style, I think, is kind of best for a guy like Undertaker, who's older, who might not be able to have the 25-minute classics in the ring that he would want at his age. So I could see him continuing to do like cinematic matches for a few more years, but you know, it's kind of, I guess it's his call. You know, he has the leverage to make the decision when he wants to walk away or not. I don't know. I don't, I'm not going to make any declarations because I wouldn't be surprised one bit if he returns.
Yeah, he's coming back with the 45. He's going to, wearing 45 like Jordan, he'll fight Sting in a cinematic match. I'm saying it now.
Exactly.
All right. Lastly, something stupid I like to do to end these interviews. Let's play a game this time. You, like many athletes and celebrities during the quarantine, gravitated towards Cameo. You've been great involving charities with yours. It's a place where a lot of people were able to connect with their fans, especially during a tough time. You, I think, are priced perfectly at $125. Like you said, a lot of it going to charity. But what I want to do is I want to list off some of other celebrities. You tell me if you think they are cheaper or more expensive than you.
Ooh, let's do it.
Okay. All right, let's start with basketball player Austin Rivers.
Cheaper.
He is cheaper. He is $50. Listen, if I got Doc on a kind of a conference call, I'd pay a lot more, but I think 50 is right for Austin.
Right.
Okay, here we go. Rap legend Flavor Flav.
Ooh, well, I think Flav had that resurgence several years ago with Flavor of Love. Mm-hmm. I bet he thinks I'm going to just say he's definitely more expensive than me.
He is double. He is $250. He's an expensive cameo.
I'm not shocked at all.
Okay. All right. Bar Rescue John Taffer. This is the guy who yells at people, tells them their restaurant is garbage. I feel like I could maybe get him to tell me my house is dirty. Is he more expensive or cheaper than you on Cameo?
I'm going to guess he's someone who's a little self-important. I'm going to go more expensive.
Hey, you know what? I agree with you. He's $150. I knew it. You're exactly right. You know that John Taffer is not humble about his cameo pricing, so he is $25 more than you. All right. Reality TV star Heidi Montag from The Hills. Is she more expensive or cheaper than you?
Ooh, she was a big deal at one point. I'm going to go more expensive than me.
She is actually she's $25 less. She's $100.
Mm.
Yeah, not bad.
Would have guessed it.
All right, let's go to Cisco, the thong song, you know, R&B crooner. Ooh. From Drew Hill. Cisco, is he less money or more expensive than you?
You know, this is random, but somehow Woods is friends with Cisco. I think they met at a gaming thing or something, and they like text. I think we were trying to do something with all of us, but so I will definitely not be besmirching Cisco. I will go cheaper.
He is cheaper. He's $100. But also, now I am obsessed with the idea of New Day being the new Drew Hill with Cisco coming out and performing R&B at a show.
We've talked for years. We've talked about doing a booty song. You know, like an old school Miami bass, that kind of like just that kind of booty song.
808.
And I think with Cisco, I think that's the way to do it.
Love it. Lastly, let's do one last one. It is teen heartthrob Jennifer Love Hewitt. Is she cheaper or more expensive than Big E on Cameo?
She should definitely be more expensive. I had a huge crush on Jennifer Love Hewitt in my teen years. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful woman. I'll go more expensive.
She is by $25. She's $150. You did very good in the game. I did want to also let you know that the soup Nazi is only $80. I didn't even need to ask you. It just seems like he's too low, considering we can get him to say no soup for you to any family member.
Right. He's way too low. I'm sure you know this because I try to tout it at all possible times. I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite sitcom of all time. Probably my favorite TV show of all time.
Sure.
And that's a bargain.
I think it's a great bargain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Big E, thank you for not only doing the interview, but for everything you're doing with WWE and making sure that, you know, they have so many kid fans. I feel like you guys are doing great work with alerting people to what's going on around the world. And thanks for talking to me.
I appreciate it, man. We're trying. We're all just trying. Thanks for having me. That was fun.
WWE intellectual property used with permission of World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated. The Sports Bubble is produced and distributed by Treefort Media. The show was executive produced by Kelly Garner, Lisa Ammerman, Matthew Kugler, and me, Jensen Karp. Tom Monahan is our senior audio engineer and sound supervisor, with production and editing by Jasper Leek. Additional production help from Tim Schauer, June Rosen, and Haley Mandelberg. Our theme music is composed by Spilkus. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please subscribe, rate us, and review us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please visit feedingamerica.org. If you're able to make a donation, any amount makes a difference, and you can learn more about other ways you can help on their website. For more information on the Sports Bubble, links to the socials, and for show transcripts for our hearing impaired listeners, go to treefort.fm. Be safe and be well. The Sports Bubble is a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.